It's time to strap in for another edition of the Cars Guide podcast, the show that takes you beyond the test drive. This is episode number 215, Best Electric Cars Coming in 2022. I'm Cars Guide Deputy Editor James Cleary, and joining me in looking at the oncoming crop of cars without a tailpipe are Senior Journalist Richard Berry.
Hello.
And the lead on our EV guide, Tom White.
Hello.
We'll also take a look at the fresh metal we've been driving this week and dive into your feedback. YouTubers, you can jump ahead via the time codes in the notes or click on the chapter markers in the timeline. So let's get to it. Best EVs, and I must clarify, coming to Australia in 2022. Some of them are around in other parts of the globe. But Tom, you authored this story that we're going to have a walk through. And you made the point at the beginning that it felt like 2021 was a turning point, that where people were starting to realise that maybe the next car they buy might be an ICE car, but the one after that might be a pure EV or even earlier. Do you still stick with that?
I think it's half the people I talk to just anecdotally in real life at the moment is, you know, not on the internet. They're talking about either they're going to wait until they can buy an EV or they're frustrated that they can't afford one now. So I think there's a big sentiment out there. We've seen it reflected in the traffic as well. You know, EV guides had a really good kind of, launch period of people really interested in all these topics that we're sort of writing about. And especially this one, best electric cars arriving in 2022. There's a lot of really interesting cars coming out that are going to change the price point, change the amount of range, how fast they can charge. So I think, it's going to be a really interesting year. There's going to be some really interesting launches, and I think people will have a lot to look forward to.
And part of that, Richard, is infrastructure. And juding by the car that's in your background there, it's unlikely to be EV powered, although it could be. It's the charging infrastructure as well, isn't it, that needs to come up to speed for people to confidently go out and buy an electric car?
Absolutely. There is no electric vehicle quite as adorable as the Hirohata Mercury behind me. famous Barris custom and very close to my heart.
Okay,
now,
great.
Something's going on here, and I think Australia's in a prime position to completely stuff this up, like the NBN and like everything else it touches. The general population is now completely primed and ready for an electric vehicle. And I know this because mum's talking about it, right? And then mum's kind of that talkback radio level where she's determined to sell her i30, the Hyundai i30, and she wants an electric vehicle now. But the problem is that she can't have one because they are too expensive. The infrastructure's not there. I swear, I've been waiting at a charger myself for 2 hours to get onto the charger. If even five more people buy an electric vehicle, I would have had to have waited five times longer. Yes. So there's not enough chargers in the country. They take too long to charge. And not only that, the etiquette of chargers is out the window too. People just leave their car in the charger and then go off shopping. And then
Even after it's charged,
they use it as a parking spot. This is the issue that we've got. The audience, the population is primed, and it's taken, as Tom said, so long. And we've watched the traffic build and build and build for EVs over the last 10 years. Finally, the people are ready, but the cars aren't here yet. There's only a handful of cars that you can really buy. There's only a couple which are truly affordable. There's still issues with range. Australian conditions aren't very EV friendly either in terms of the temperature of the country and running the electric vehicles, and also the remote distances as well.
Yeah,
just to clarify there, it's not even talking about, like, when we talk about the temperature of the country, it's not to do with battery chemistry. It's to do with the fact that you have to run the aircon. So you can take at least 20Ks off the total range of your car. It's not
well,
great.
There'll be a couple of cars once we get into this story that are getting closer to the affordability threshold, however you define that. But also, Tom, you wrote a news story also about Shell in the UK experimenting with an EV hub, where some of those concerns that you raised, Richard, are at least they're addressed to some degree, where, acknowledging that electric cars take a while to charge. So it's a convenience store, it's a coffee lounge, it's other things to do That to me sounds like a stopgap measure until cars are faster to charge. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think with the charger thing, it's a chicken and egg thing, right? Because what happens is you get people who are interested in buying electric cars, but they don't want to buy an electric car because there's nowhere to charge it up. And then because no one's buying an electric car, the companies that build the chargers go, oh, it's not profitable for me to put this in because no one's buying an electric car. So it's a real kind of...
Which is first. Where in other jurisdictions, government has stepped in and played some part in establishing all of that. But that's a whole other discussion. We're here to talk about the products. So let's start, eh? And the first one, Audi's already some way down the road with its e-tron SUV, but now we're getting into the performance side of things, and it's their take on the Taycan, you know, the Porsche Taycan. It's the e-tron GT. It's a four-door coupe, Tom. Tell us about it.
Yeah, same platform as the Taycan or Taycan, however you want to pronounce that. I should look into how you pronounce that correctly because it's one of those
we often get tongue-tied with what we call Macan, and we've been told it's Machan.
Machan, yeah.
No, it's Macan. It's Macan. Macan? Anyway, you know, someone will set us straight. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All
right.
So e-tron GT, back on topic. It's powerful. It's quick. It's a low slung. You can think of it sort of like it's bigger than a A7 or S7.
Yeah.
It's wide. It's low. Big battery. And importantly, it has an 800 volt architecture. And this is one of those things that's going to get interesting, I think, going forward when people are looking at sort of the specs of electric cars and the different voltage of architectures essentially determines how fast they can charge. And so this car being on an 800 volt architecture allows it to charge at a rate of 207 kilowatts, which might not.
Have we got chargers that'll put that much juice out at this point?
There's a handful in Australia. There's maybe one in Sydney and one in Melbourne, as far as I know, but they're planning to put a few more in. Uh-huh. And so essentially that means it'll travel 488 kilometers and it'll recharge that. Like, that's a pretty long range. Like, that's one of the longer ranges of all EVs on the market at the moment. It will charge that in 22 minutes and 30 seconds, according to Audi, if you can get the full 270 kilowatts. So,
which is rare at this point. But
long range, fast charging time, and the car itself is fast too. It'll put down some crazy amount, 440 kilowatts, 830 newton meters.
Yeah, and that's the RS version. So there'll be an RS1, and it's early this year. So that's interesting. Richard, let's keep rolling through.
Yep.
The next one, BMW, is another brand with some runs on the board in terms of EVs. We've seen them go down the path of i3 and i8. Maybe that was a bit of a blind alley. They've reassessed and come back. And the ones we're talking about, we're following iX3. We've got the i4, and it's coming in the first quarter of this year. And it's familiar territory in that it looks a lot like the 4 Series. It has that distinctive grille. What do you think? Is that closer to the mark from BMW's point of view?
It is. I remember going to a BMW launch about 5 years ago and them telling us that they weren't going to move over to EVs just yet because they weren't sure if there was any money to be made out of them. So you know that there is now money to be made out of them when we're seeing things like the iX and the i4 and things like that. Look, they're so true to the BMW brand. They still look like BMWs. They don't look like an i8 or an i3, which looks like a science experiment, even though I think the i8's amazing. And I love the
massive i3 lover. Big fan of that car.
They're so good. It's almost like they've gone, oh, hang on, maybe we shouldn't go too kooky. Maybe our buyership is not quite ready for that.
A carbon monocoque, you know,
it's carbon monocoque made out of driftwood, you know, that type of thing. Which is cool, but you know, I don't think it's completely BMW buyer profile, and I think this is. So I think this is well on the way. I think it'll be bought like hotcakes. Absolutely.
Cool. Anyway, it's looking like it'll start at just under 100 grand. So not necessarily passing the affordability test for a lot of people.
It's also just quickly joining two other really interesting BMWs that have launched just recently, the iX3, which is the electric version of the X3, and the iX, which is the big flagship
SUV. Like,
SUV. It's like an X7, but electric. It's interesting.
Have you seen that change color? Have you seen it's amazing.
So I think the i4, there'll also be a performance version, M50. So, that's the thing about electric motors. All these cars are so hugely powerful with so much torque. I don't know whether that's what people really want. But anyway, that's the way it's going at the premium end of things. But we now get into BYD. And this is where we're talking about cars that might come closer to most people's budgets. And BYD, the Yuan Plus, first half of this year, the local importer is Nexport. And I don't know about you, Tom, I did a little bit of digging and they have a zero emission bus running in Sydney. They're doing all kinds of things. And part of it being these cars, they reckon they'll have six new models within a reasonable amount of time. But this first one is an SUV and it's mid-size, but kind of somewhere between small to large mid-size.
I think it's worth remembering, like BYD, people aren't going to know BYD in Australia. So BYD is new to Australia. It's a Chinese automaker. It's pretty huge in China and it's made a lot of ground on electric cars. It uses a slightly different battery sort of chemistry and design to a lot of rival automakers. And the whole point of that is bringing the cost down so that, there's more affordable options on the market. And obviously they can also snap up that sort of entry level to the EV space as well. And they're hoping to do that here in Australia as well. So they're bringing their first model. It's about Nissan Qashqai size, according to the dimensions. It'll be interesting to see what it looks like, because we know a lot of those SUVs that come in between that mid-size and the small SUV space tend to look quite different depending on their design. Like some of them look quite big and some of them look quite small. So it'll be interesting to see how this one looks, but it's promising 450 kilometers of range and they're claiming around $40,000.
Around 40 grand. Would that pass the mum test, do you reckon, Richard? Is that getting closer to the mark? It's an online model, so they'll be selling directly online.
She might be a bit thrown by the name.
Okay.
She has trouble with names anyway, but build your dreams. She'd be like, oh, that's a bit of a wank, Richard, isn't it? That's what she'd say.
She wouldn't necessarily be a proud owner of a build your dream.
I don't know. I think she would prefer to have a well-known established brand like Hyundai as an electric Hyundai. Do you know what I mean?
Will, look, the dreams don't end there because there's a second build your dreams. It's the EA1. And this time we're talking about mid-2022. It's a hatchback. Again, 400 kilometers plus worth of range. Similar, am I right in thinking similar underpinnings, Tom, and a cobalt-free battery, which I think you were referring to just a little while ago?
Yeah, so that's, again, one of the special things about BYD is from the beginning, they realized that resources were going to be a problem in battery manufacturing. And so this battery that underpins this car, it's called the Blade battery. It is cobalt-free. And they're also trying to remove or lower the amount of lithium in it and stuff like this. And the point of that is cobalt's a controversial material. You're going to start hearing a lot more about cobalt in the coming years because it's a controversial material in the EV industry. It's required for high voltage lithium batteries right now, but it only comes from, I think, two places in the world. It comes from Russia and the Congo.
Yeah, and it's mined by children.
Yes.
Yeah, and of course, Blade is a fabulous movie franchise as well. So there are kinds of commercial possibilities.
Never got into it.
And so the BYD EA1, get us back on topic again. The BYD EA1, it's a small hatchback.
Yeah.
You can probably think of it's bigger than it looks, but maybe kind of that kind of Kia Rio size. Or maybe a little bit bigger than that even.
Like a Jazz, Honda Jazz.
Yeah, looks like a Honda Jazz. Like it's got that kind of vibe to it, that kind of stubby nose and stuff.
Yeah.
But again, 400 plus kilometer range up to, and it's promising to be quite affordable. In China, it's called the Dolphin. So if you've seen it around with that name, that's why. And interestingly, on the topic of BYD, yes, they say it's for build your dreams, but I think that's a branding exercise because I was reading that there was an interview with the founder, who's quite a character, and he coyly admitted that originally it stood for bring your dollars.
That's where everyone's mind
goes. Bring your dollars.
Bring your dough. Well, now, Richard, this is a brand that you've had a bit to do with over time. Genesis is going to put its spin on the IONIQ 5 from Hyundai and the EV6 from Kia to have its first fully electric model. And it's called the GV60, and it's an SUV. What do you make of that?
Yes. And this is the thing, that little, what is it, little Jazz BYD is not going to sell. No one's going to buy that. We've seen the microcar market in Australia has shrunk to basically the Picanto.
I love the Picanto.
And the Fiat 500. Yeah, but the Picanto, if they made an electric version of that.
And we're not getting the electric version of the Fiat 500, which is a roaring shame. Right.
That's a bummer.
It is a bummer. No, but I think the Genesis GV60, it looks amazing. And especially in that yellow pine lime splice color. And it will have, yes, the same underpinnings, I understand, as the EV6 and the IONIQ 5. So it's going to be bulletproof underneath. We need electric SUVs. That's SUVs are the most popular car or type of vehicle in Australia. So electric SUVs, these tiny electric hatchbacks aren't going to sell. No one wants a tiny hatchback, petrol or otherwise anyway. So I like this GV60. Still, that Genesis name has a long way to go, though.
It does. But it's interesting, the slowly kind of approach with the deep pockets of Hyundai behind it, where others have faltered.
Yep.
You know, I'm talking Infiniti, I suppose. They're not making any great claims about their volume, coming at it from a different perspective. And, you know, so far, that seems to be working according to plan. But
and they fully admitted that they knew it would be a long uphill battle and that they were sort of willing to commit to it. And I think they're hoping, you know, that the cars will speak for themselves, because most of, like, pretty much all the cars come out of Genesis so far have been great.
True. So, yes, that's a build. That'll be a winner.
Now, yes, slow build, but big winner.
We were talking about Hyundai and IONIQ as its standalone electric entity. And of course, we've had the 5, and following 5 is 6. So it's based on, it's a mid-sized sedan, and it's, we think, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, that was based on this Prophecy concept, and people on YouTube will be able to see a couple of pics of that, which is a super sleek looking machine. So if it's anything like that. And when are we talking for that? It's this year, but I don't know exactly when. Do you have a read on that, Tom?
No, they haven't given us a quarter for that, but they do say it will be this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And we know that once the car is, like, the car hasn't even been revealed yet, but we know that once that happens, if there's any brand that will get it to our market, like, snap quickly, it's Hyundai. They're very good at doing that. So
I think we managed to jag a kind of a sneak peek, did we not, where one looked to be coming off a production line or some kind of assembly line?
I think it's a render, but I'm not sure.
No, it's not. It's from one of our spies. Mal, because little did people know, Mal's very flexible, our editor.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he's wearing his Mission Impossible sort of...
His black beanie, he's got the
Genesis, not Genesis, it was all the same factory, and managed to snap that pic using his belt camera.
Yeah, I'm just imagining him with the Hamburglar mask.
Yeah. And look, amazingly, you make the point, Tom, that the IONIQ 6 will be followed by the IONIQ 7 in early 2024, which is a large SUV. So more to come.
And we'll see the Kia version of that first, I think.
Righto.
The large SUV.
Okay. Well, what we're talking about next is a Kia, and it's the EV6. Lots of 5, 6s and 7s flying around here. So it's Kia's first take on that. Those underpinnings that are under the IONIQ 5 and rear or all-wheel drive. Tom, would that mean either a front motor or rear motor, or, you know, is that how it would be configured?
Yeah, it's the same as IONIQ 5. So, you know, if you've seen that car out there, it starts rear-wheel drive, though. So even though it's sort of a mid-size SUV, and you kind of look at it and go, oh, yeah, it's just going to be front-wheel drive, whatever. No, they've engineered that platform to have all the driving dynamics and all of this kind of cooked in benefits of a rear drive platform.
Yeah.
And so it starts rear, and then you get a front motor if you want the all wheel drive one. The Kia is promising that it will be like at the higher end of the market than the IONIQ 5, which is really interesting. They're targeting a different position to that car, and then they're going full sporty, full luxury. Like, it should be pretty nice. And I've seen a couple on the roads already. So
it is going to be Kia's most expensive car. It's going to be pushing right up against the 100K mark. It's going to be a $100,000 Kia. And that's for the top of the range car.
Yeah.
But 0 to 100 in what, 3.1 seconds?
That's right. I mean, that begs the question. They're all super fast, but how many people want that kind of acceleration? Anyway,
I do.
Okay, but I think that'll play out over time, you know?
I think as well, like and I've been saying this for a while, ever since Tesla have just been ridiculously fast, I think power figures are just going to stop mattering because everything will be so fast.
Yeah. Do you know what as well? I think even road rules will need to be changed because we've all driven electric vehicles and you've got a double yellow line where you can't pass somebody. But in an electric vehicle, your acceleration is so brutal that you could pass someone on that particular corner. So I reckon there's going to have to be a complete overview of current road rules and signage.
Interesting. That's a whole other podcast.
Even tyres are being overhauled at the moment. They have to think about having low rolling resistance, but enough grip for all the extra weight. And the developments that are going on in tyre technology right now. Most recent facelift of the Hyundai Kona Electric, it got something like 40 k's more range. All they changed was the tyres. They didn't change anything else.
I see. Okay, well, that's interesting. I've got to say about that EV6, it to me, it's a cross between a small wagon and an SUV. It's really in that mid space between them, low slung, but long wheelbase, as you say in the story, Tom.
It's very sportage, actually.
The next one, to me, it's the EQE Mercedes-Benz. So it's going into the mainstream heartland for Mercedes-Benz, the E-Class, an electric version of their traditional sedan. And just one word comes to mind for me with this car, which is dashboard. That full-blown, full-width dash that just kind of dances its way across the car is incredible. To me, it looks amazing, but also I wonder where it's going to go wrong first.
Is this one upmanship? Is this one-upmanship? Yeah. Like, are we talking?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Are we talking now like MBUX or MBUX, as we like to call it in the office? It's been so successful and so emulated by so many other brands. That kind of dual widescreen layout, it looks amazing. It's super glitzy. It has everything that consumers are looking to buy right now in a car like that.
Mm.
But now that that's been so emulated in the market elsewhere,
they've gone big.
No, we've got to go even more. Just make the whole thing a screen.
You know, just quietly, I'd really like to know what the cost is, because I reckon it'd probably be less than a lot of people think. I think it's one of those things where it presents as a dazzling, like, wow factor. But screens, they're in so many devices that most people use these days. I just don't know whether it's a high cost thing. It could be a great way of creating a lot of drama at relatively low cost.
JC, I would even say that these days that the cost of producing analog instruments and installing it into a dashboard in a cluster would be more than LCD screen.
Totally agree. That's why back in the day, electric windows were such a win for manufacturers, because they were super easy to manufacture, easy to install, weighed less, and you could charge more.
Yeah.
I think a manual crank was much more expensive.
I think we also have to talk about how controversial the exterior appearance of this car is.
I can't believe we haven't mentioned that yet.
Oh, I'm just dominated by the dash.
It's because you don't want to think about the outside, which is controversial because it's kind of got this amorphous pill shape. I don't even know what
it does look like. It looks like a Panadol pill.
Yeah.
Right. Does it have a smiley face on the bonnet or something like that?
Well, but it's. I think it's also interesting that, you know, we see with the BMW i4 that BMW want to kind of stick close to what their consumer expects, but Mercedes have just sort of flipped the script on its head and going, because I think the E-Class looks lovely now. Yeah. And they're just going, we're going to get rid of all that.
Well, I suppose at the very least, you've got to say hats off for a roll of the dice, you know, trying something different and a little bit of courage goes a long way. So, let's move on. Speaking of courage, Polestar is a brand that's been making big moves in the electric space. They've now got a high-riding kind of sedan body on the Polestar 2, following the Polestar 1. So we've got this numerical domination, but they have really got their design game face on. It's a fantastic-looking car. If we're worried about the E-Class from Merck, this one certainly looks the business, and it's dual motor. It's got it all going on, Tom.
Yeah, what's look for me? I mean, we've already driven this car. It does technically arrive in February, and that's because there's been some logistics delays with Polestar being able to sell the cars. So the cars have been here since late last year. And so we've had the opportunity to drive them. And I don't know, you've driven one, Richard. I've driven one. I'm not sure.
I put 900 Ks on one.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm not sure if James has had a chance to.
No, not so far.
Get behind the wheel. But yeah, I think it drives great. I think it looks fantastic. It really does own that Scando paired back, but also really tasteful look.
Yeah.
I
was going to say highlights the Google integrated software stuff. Like that's a bit of a step forward.
That was the best. The fact that you could go, hey, Google, take me to Shoal Bay. Right. And it would just, or the address in Shoal Bay where we were on holiday, and it instantly did it better than any inbuilt navigation ever, or better than using your phone.
The cost of that at the moment is you don't have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. They do expect you to use all the functions through Google. It's essentially like having Android built into your car, though.
Yeah.
So that is a cost, but they do say Apple CarPlay is being worked on. So if you're still pining after that feature, it's on the way. The great thing about this car is it does bring the cost down. Yes, it's in a premium market space, but no, it's not too expensive. Like the starting model is about the same as a base model Tesla Model 3, and kind of nearly equivalent spec. So that's really nice to see. There's a proper competitor in that space now.
Did you know Leonardo DiCaprio is also bankrolling it?
So Polestar.
So Leonardo DiCaprio is a massive environmental activist. So between Geely and Volvo, the third player is Leo, and he's actually providing a lot of money.
Amazing. Interesting. Well, amazing fact.
There is just quickly. I know.
I learned that on the set of Titanic, actually.
which, of course, you're an extra on.
I was in the band.
but that is one of Polestar's brand differences is they promise that the cars are traced cradle to grave in terms of all of their emissions and their environmental impact. And they do try and reduce the amount of materials that can't be recycled in the car.
Right. Okay. So where are we now? We were just on Polestar. We're now heading towards Volvo C40. That's, in the same kind of family, but it's a small SUV. I think late this year is its timing. Again, we've got the Google integrated software, as I understand it, and it will be, again, an exclusively online sales model. Which is interesting. It seems to be a distinct trend when it comes to these EVs.
It's strange. Yeah. I don't know if there is enough distinction between Polestar and Volvo. I mean, Tom, is Polestar supposed to be the performance version of the Volvo?
It ran everything from their motorsport programs to performance oriented versions of the
cars. I know the little blue tile on the back of the tailgate. Yeah. But now, like, what is supposed to be the distinction between Volvo and Polestar? Because I'm telling you, everything that was in that Polestar that I drove was in a regular Volvo. It's the same materials, the same screens, the same steering wheel, the same everything, but just with Polestar branding.
So that was one question that we did ask the Polestar people when we had a sort of dial-in conference with them. And They said that's actually a really interesting question. And yes, the Polestar 2 is very similar to cars like the C40 and the XC40, shares a platform, shares a battery, shares the motors, shares the interior technology, as you said. But they said going forward, the brands are going to start to go apart. So the Polestar 2 is more of a car. I wouldn't say it's a car of convenience because it is still like it's got that sort of zany design and a value proposition that Volvo doesn't have right now. But it's in that kind of, okay, we can lean on these things to build a car and get it to market
to get some momentum going.
Yeah. That's not to say it's a bad car. I mean, we've driven it. It's great. But they said in the future, Polestar is going to move in another direction. And I think the most interesting thing is they kept talking about, we're going to take on Porsche in all these segments. So we're going to have a Macan rival. We're going to have a Panamera rival. Like there's going to be all these.
So that's what I reckon they're doing. It will continue to be the performance division of Volvo, but as an electric entity.
Yeah. And they said the designs are going to like start to go way apart from Volvo. Like they'll share platforms, but the designs they put on top are going to be like as zany as they can make them.
All right. Yeah. Well, look, that's cool. And I think we started with an Audi. Let's bookend it with another Audi. The last one is the S version of the e-tron. The e-tron is a car that we're already familiar with, but in typical Audi fashion, dialing up the performance yet again. The S will launch at some stage this year. There'll be an SUV-style body and a coupe, and they're not in the affordable range. I think we're talking 165 and 172 for those two cars. So it's one of those ones that you won't see all that often, I dare say.
A little bit less range than the more entry-level 55, but that top spec car that costs 172 plus, it has 973 newton meters of torque.
I know. Holy and look, I was thinking cow. I was thinking back to combustion cars that I've driven with that much torque, and it was an Merc AMG SL65. So it's the that was the V12 Roadster, and it had 1,000 newton meters. And here is this Audi you just get the feeling it could just be a dial, you know, when the car comes off the end of the production line, what do we want it to have? Oh, yeah, close to 1,000.
That was like the one we took to Tasmania, I think, at the time. That was a rocket.
That was it. Yeah, that was a lot of torque. No matter how you produce it, that's a lot of torque.
Yeah.
So anyway, look, that's a great wrap-up. So I make it 11 cars that we've highlighted there. For all the details, the story is on the Cars Guide site. So if you want to get extra info, please head there. But now we're going to go to our garage and cars that we've been driving. And Richard, I'd like to start with you. Yes. The good, the bad, the summary on. Tell us about it, please.
Okay. Look, one of the perks of having this job is that you can look ahead in the car calendar and see what cars are coming up. And you can sometimes put your hand up for them. We've just been moving, and I noticed a whole series of Caddies coming up. And I spoke to our car wrangling guru and managed to get myself into the Caddies. The main Caddy that I've been in for the majority of the time that I want to talk about is the Caddy Crew Van Maxi. And it's a long wheelbase. So it comes with five seats. So the good thing about this car is that it comes with five seats, but also a really substantial cargo area. I'd say the bad thing about it is you can't wind those second row windows down. And you can't even do that on the passenger version of the Caddy Life, which I'm currently driving at the moment too. So you can't wind those windows down. But at the same time, I've loved this car because it's seriously worked as hard as me. And I'm still surprised by how much you can fit in there. So it's based on the same platform as the new Golf, Volkswagen Golf. So it drives like a car, but it really drives like a car,
doesn't it?
Absolutely.
That was one of the things that took me aback the most. Yeah. I kept expecting it to disappoint me somewhere. Like I was driving and I'm like, come on, like have the big crash and rattle. Never happened.
It's really easy to fix. It's very easy to forget that you've got an entire house load of boxes in the back.
Isn't that interesting? So, but when it's empty, do you still get a bit of booming? I mean, it's the nature of a boxy vehicle.
Yeah, you do. Okay. Look, in the cargo, in the full-on cargo version of the two seats, you run and go in the back. Not so much in the crew van. That wasn't anywhere near as boomy, but but the insulation is darn good. So
super. Good on you. Thank you, Richard. Tom. We're moving to a different brand from Volkswagen to Lexus. Please tell us what you've been driving. And it is in tune with the theme of today's show.
Yes, it is. So I've been driving the Lexus UX 300E. And so the UX is the smallest current Lexus now that the CT has been officially killed off. So the UX is a small SUV. And I think the biggest benefit of going electric for this car is that it now really feels like a Lexus. I think my problem with the UX before was, you could choose it as a hybrid or a 2 liter with a CVT, and it just didn't feel like a luxury car. Like that drivetrain was quite unrefined, and it did really feel like you were just sort of driving a CHR with a nicer badge on it, and to be fair, a much nicer interior. But the 300E now with this electric drivetrain, it's much quieter. It's much more subtle in the way it does everything. It feels like a really coherent EV, a really coherent luxury car now. And I think that's what that car needed. So cool. I think it's cool. Lovely. On the downside, though, it's not as cheap as it could be. Yes, it competes very directly with the EQA class, which is the Mercedes equivalent, essentially. Yep. And I think it's actually more coherent as both an EV and a luxury car compared to the EQA. I think it feels a bit nicer than that car with an equivalent power output. However, for very similar money, you can get into a Volvo XC40 Recharge Pure Electric, which has twice the power.
Yeah, twice the power, dual motor, all-wheel drive. I do like the styling of that UX though. I think it's probably the prettiest Lexus ever made.
Really?
I love it's got little fins on the tail lights. They look amazing.
Like I don't hate it, but I don't love it.
Okay. All right. That's a debate for another time. I'll finish it off. BMW 4 Series, so M440i xDrive, meaning all-wheel drive, Grand Coupe. So it's a 3-litre turbo petrol, inline six, 8-speed auto, all-wheel drive. It's about $115,000, $116,000, 285 kilowatts, 500 newton metres in quite a compact little car. It's in competition with things like a C43, Merc AMG, S5 Sportback, and a few others. The pluses, I think, are numerous. The style, I'm not a fan of that grille on the 4 Series, but that aside, I think it's a stylish car. Value in that part of the market is strong when you look at the equipment list. Practicality, surprisingly practical and spacious in the back particularly. It's refined and it's just that engine, 0 to 100 in 4.7 seconds. It's a cracker of an engine. Minus the grille. I'm not a fan. The warranty, BMW is now lagging badly in that premium market with a 3-year unlimited. They've got to go to 5 years sooner rather than later, I would have thought. The door handles are quite slender. And you notice in the wet weather, particularly when you go to open the door, it's an upward lifting little slender panel. Your hand slips off. If you favored long fingernails, I think they'd be broken within minutes. That was just a little design flaw that stuck out for me. And the lane departure warning was overly keen to correct you all the time. And I actually turned it off. And you can dial down the steering wheel vibration warnings as well. But overall, I thought it was a lovely driving experience. Really enjoyed it. So I think in that part of the market, it's a good option against tough competition because the S5 particularly, I think also is a great car. Yeah. So there we go. Now, we're going to go to feedback. It's comment of the week. And as I've said before, it's on top of the shipping container at the front of the Cars Guide forecourt, you know, with the bunting up, the balloons are out, the fluoro paint on the windscreen. This is the one that stood out. And Einfelder says, now, we were talking last week about best 4x4s and SUVs coming in 2022. And I think Crafty touched on the INEOS Grenadier. And he says, now, Einfelder says, how could you possibly label the Grenadier, quote, pretty pricey when a POS, now you guys might know what that acronym means.
Power off switch.
Like an Everest costs the same, or 79 series, or Prado, or basic 300 series. Get a grip. The Grenadier is a state-of-the-art new design and everything off-roaders could want except a track record. With the quality of developers that have been used throughout the Grenadier evolution, it seems implausible that it will be as failure-prone as a Discovery. The 300 has no track record yet either, especially the engine. With the way that's a very, very interesting point of view, I think.
As Elon Musk says, running a car company is the most difficult thing that he's ever done. And this is a bloke who also runs a space company. Mm. Grenadier will not be here next year.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting call. We'll put that on the list of calls that we've made. Yeah.
We also said Tesla would be gone in 2 years, but I did. But they won't be. Mark my words.
I actually also agree with him that I think the coolest thing about the Grenadier is that it's so interesting. Like, it's so cool.
And it's got so many details.
Yeah.
Is it sustainable as a car company?
We will see.
They do have one foot in the future as well because, they're launching with this kind of BMW running gear, but they've also teamed up with, I think, a Hyundai, was it? They're going to put a fuel cell EV in one. They're experimenting with that.
They're just rich boys playing with toys.
Well, look,
and their money runs out.
Tom says it's been interest. BMW diesel or petrol is the engine. And from 84,500, that sounds like a fair chunk of change. But in that part of the market, you know, that a starting price, you've got a Defender at 71. Okay, that undercuts it. But it doesn't take much to get a Land Cruiser 300 up beyond that, well beyond that. So interesting point. Mm. Very, very good comment.
Yeah, and we're in such an interesting time, Richard. Don't be such a city. This is the time for new automakers.
You came up with two drunk rich guys at a pub who said, why don't we make a Land Rover Defender, but the way it should be? Let's do it.
The way you were saying that, I thought you were there, Richard. You might have actually planted the seed of the idea. Yeah. All right, look, with that, we have reached the finish line. So it is time to say thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
And thank you, Richard.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to our production genius, editing emperor and vibe manager, Mr. Pritchard, for his dedication to the Cars Guide podcast cause. Today, he's wearing a T-shirt saying ANBG. That's bang out of order. Donut pants and horse slippers. They are incredible. Jump into the conversation. Cars Guide's on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. Apple Podcast listeners, please take a moment to rate and review the show. 5 is the preferred number of stars. That would be great. Thank you. If you enjoyed the episode, make sure to subscribe to the Cars Guide YouTube channel so you can stay on top of all our latest content and everything that we've been talking about. You can find more detail on it at the site as well. But before we go, my wife took her car to the Automotive Sparky to have a dodgy interior light fixed, picked the car up, light was fine. But as she drove away, she was zapped by a current coming through the steering wheel. Understandably, she was upset and angry, went straight back to old mate and gave it to him with both barrels. All he could say was, people are usually shocked when they find out I'm a rubbish auto electrician.
What? People
are usually shocked.
Oh, that was the joke.
Yeah. Anyway, there it is.
You got new glasses.